Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Buju Anin
Danacha at Anzeni Shukwithan
Tanse
Ay Inuhadikay.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Hey, welcome back to Words and Culture. I'm Melissa Spence, your host for the Anishinaabe episodes. And like I mentioned in our first episode, I did not grow up with the language around me every day. But there were glimmers of it during my summertime visits to the res. I have one specific memory of lying on my Aunt Rita's couch with a full belly of elk meat and potatoes, where I dozed off to the voices of my uncle and his family speaking the language. It was then that I realized just how different my life was to those who lived full-time on the res, being fully immersed in their culture, whether it was keeping the gardens and learning from plants and picking medicines, to hunting, or just sitting on the land and resting. Being a full-time Anishinaabe, with the language everywhere, was a really surreal world for me back then. It got me thinking, what would it take for me to start learning these things? Would a book help? Maybe a video series from the library, but I found nothing. The world of the res and its complete immersion, at least in the 1990s anyway, in Anishinaabe culture seemed unreachable for me. It would be many, many years for me to realize that that was just me psyching myself out. In fact, my next guest is here to tell me just how immersed you need to be in the language in order to properly learn it. I'd like to introduce my next guest, Duncan McHugh. He is an award-winning broadcaster, an author, a professor, and is a masterful storyteller and a celebrated leader in decolonizing journalism. And he's sort of a trailblazer for someone like me. This is our conversation.
Ani Kinagwea, Onkwadans Indigenakas, Maingan Nedodem, Chippewas of Georgina Island and Donjaba, Anishinaabe Indal, Us Indal, Gwis Indal, Edabajmet Indal, and Miigwech, good to meet you. Meanwhile, Jaganosh one news when Duncan McHugh. So that is the our traditional greeting amongst our peoples, Anishinaabek, and for those whose Anishinaabemowin is a little bit rusty, that was my name and clan, community that I'm from. I said that I'm a father, a son, and a Edabajmet, a storyteller or a journalist, as the word that I like to use for journalist.
So what's been your journey like with the language thus far in your life?
Oh, it's a big sigh, Melissa, because it's journey is the right word for it. My grandparents, my Shomas and my gran were both fluent speakers of Anishinaabemowin. And within one generation, that was gone in my family. They made a conscious decision to not speak it around the home. And why, you know, I'm not sure that I totally understand. They didn't go to residential school, either one of them. But I think they felt the impacts of racism for sure, and also they were very conscious of wanting their family, their sons, to have economic opportunities. And I think that they saw the, you know, speaking in English, being educated at school at white schools as being important and advantageous to my father and all my uncles getting jobs. And so the language just wasn't, they didn't speak it to my dad or my my uncles, although my dad remembers there being regularly, you know, when people from the community came over, they spoke in Anishinaabe one, but they spoke English in the home. So, and I remember as their grandchild, you know, my grandparents speaking Anishinaabe when they didn't want us to know what was going on, you know, when they say, oh, well, you know, maybe we'll take them to the fair or maybe we should get them some candy. They would say that in Anishinaabe when it was like a secret language, you know, they didn't want the grandkids to understand, which is just horrific when you think about it now. So I did not, my father doesn't speak Anishinaabe and I did not grow up speaking it. To be honest with you, I didn't really think much about it until my late 20s when I had my first child, you know, and I wanted her to have her Indian name. I went to my gran and we went through that ceremony and process, but it occurred to me at that time that you know, I was missing out by not having that language, and that's I think when it started. I kind of planted the seed with me that I wanted to start learning. But I lived in British Columbia. I spent 20 years living in BC, and although there are lots of Anishinaabe living out there, there weren't enough of us to create a language class. So, as a long way of saying, Melissa, I didn't start learning the language until 6 years ago when I moved back to Toronto. And it was one of my major goals in moving back to Toronto that I wanted to start enrolling in language classes. It was so important to me when I moved to Toronto to find a language class that I could be part of. And so I went to the Friendship Center, the Native Canadian Center of Toronto, which offered weekly evening classes. I really was starting from scratch, and it's been quite a journey.
So the birth of your daughter, missing out on the culture, you felt, was your initial introduction to the language or your calling to the language. Why did you want to take part in the immersion camps?
The first year that I was taking those classes at the NCCT, we had an older school teacher who was a fluent first language speaker. But I have found that a lot of our older teachers have the pedagogy that they have for their teaching is kind of based on 70s and 80s workbooks that were based on how to teach French language. and we were just basically kind of reading words in that class. And it was nice to be able to hear the sounds of Anishinaabe once a week and start to have that in my life. But like hardly any of it was sticking. Like I couldn't, you know, I wasn't learning a whole heck of a lot. And part of the all other thing that was going on for me is that I'm an old guy now. Like I'm 50 plus. I'm an adult learner, and my brain don't work quite as sharp as it used to. So it takes longer for me to learn things now. So I had all of that going on, and after that first year, I realized that going once a week wasn't enough. At that time, we switched teachers at the Native Canadian Center, and my teacher became Nanatik Stats Pungalish, who I really he's a young man, second language learner himself, who has just dedicated his life to Anishinaabemowin, and he really changed my thoughts and philosophy on learning the language because he shared a couple of things. One was it's really important to learn grammar. You know, you can't just memorize all this stuff. You have to understand that our language, Anishinaabemowin, is just vastly grammatically different than English. And so you got to stop thinking in English and start thinking in Anishinaabemowin. And the kind of the phrase that we use in the class is, you know, there's a verb for that. There's a verb for everything in Anishinaabemowin. Most of the language is made up of verbs. And as you know, like, you know, our verbs are polysyllabic. So they, you know, put on prefixes and suffixes and the word just gets longer and longer and longer. But that's totally different from thinking in English. And so I needed to learn the grammar. And I also realized I got to start putting in work every day. Like I got to start doing flashcards. I got to start playing games. in Anishinaabemowin every day if any of this is going to sink in. And I needed to put myself in an immersion environment if I was going to start to really be able to get over the fear of speaking. I could learn some of it in a written way, but I just had all this emotion every time I had to speak in the language, and I still do. I still find it a challenge to speak. And I felt like an immersion setting would be the best place to try to get over some of that. So I was very fortunate that in Ontario, there's been a small group of second language learners who have just done amazing work at setting up summer immersion camps called Eshki Anishinaabemowin. And they've been running it for 2 weeks for several summers now. And these they're younger than me, second language speakers, just doing such incredibly inspirational work in terms of setting up that camp. And I really wanted to apply. So I, as part of the joining that immersion camp, you had to submit an application where you wrote 2 or 3 pages in Anishinaabemowin. I could do that. I'm not bad at my written. Once I started to put the grammar pieces together, thanks to help from Nanatig, I could write not badly in Anishinaabemowin. When if I sat there with a dictionary for several hours, you know, I could figure things out. But my speaking again was pretty limited. And we had to put together a 3-minute video speaking in Anishinaabemowin and submit it. That first year that I submitted, that was tough. Like talking for 3 minutes just in Anishinaabemowin was tough for me to do. And by the end, I'm kind of just listing off animals and kind of doing numbers, you know, basic niche, but like, you know, but I didn't get in because there was also an oral test, which we joined the teachers on Zoom, and they were speaking to me in Anishinaabemowin, and my ability to speak was just, I froze up. I got anxious. I got scared. Like, I just couldn't speak. And they said, we'd love to have you, Duncan, but you got to work on if you're going to survive 2 weeks in an immersion camp, you got to work on your oral a little bit. So that kind of, you know, gave me a challenge for sure. And I applied again the next year, same thing. I froze up again, Melissa. Like it was just like, I got 2 university degrees. Like I got all kinds of schooling, but this is like learning. Like I've never had a challenge like this before. And same thing happened to me during the oral test. And this is not like the teachers were super kind and generous people. It wasn't their approach. It was just, I had this block, this emotional block about speaking in Anishinaabemowin, and I froze up again. Anyway, so at that point, I said, I really need to just spend some time honing in on the grammar and so that I can think more quickly. That's part of what is happening. It's taking me too long to try to translate in my brain. And I need to brush up on my vocabulary. Like my vocabulary was just so small. Yeah. So I took a year off, and my goal at that time was to learn the grammar better and to take as much Anishinaabemowin as I could. And that happened to be the year of the pandemic. And so I was on a fellowship at Massey College at U of T, really an excuse for me to just study Anishinaabemowin. And as it turned out, all the Anishinaabemowin classes went online during the pandemic. And so instead of just having one class at U of T, now all of a sudden I had access to classes in Minnesota. I was taking classes with teachers from all over Ontario. And I was doing 2-3 hours of Anishinaabemowin every day. And it was so good for my language. And once again, at the end of that year, I applied to get into the immersion camp I managed to struggle my way through the interview and they accepted me. So,
wow, what a story. Congratulations.
Mm.
You brought up the block, which is something that I was talking with or speaking about with an elder that I interviewed in Winnipeg, and how she really wants to focus on expressing that block that a lot of us are experiencing when we're being reintroduced to the language, that there's a mm-hmm. huge emotional something going on inside of us where mm-hmm. it's really creating this huge obstacle when it comes mm-hmm. to being more fluent or even just expressing the language. Mm-hmm. How did you navigate that block up until this point?
So I think it's different for everybody what it is going on, but I hear it from a lot of our learners. It really crystallized for me when one of the students that I've been going to school with, a friend of mine called named Marcus, he's not native, and he was is the best student in our class. You know, we went out for dinner one evening, and he said, you know, I watch the Anishinaabe students in the class, and some of you are struggling with that emotion, and we don't have that. Like, the non-native folks in the class don't have that. We're not, you know, to us, it's a cool language, or maybe they're linguistic students and they're learning it, you know, as one more language in kind of their portfolio. But for us, Anishinaabe, there's all kinds of things going on. You know, maybe it's shame that we don't speak when we think we should. Maybe it's because we're not learning fast enough. It is a really difficult language. I mean, the Guinness Book of World Records at one point called Anishinaabe the hardest language in the world to learn. It's not an easy language to learn at the outset, but for some people, there's that residential school shame. And there was a period of time in the 70s and 80s when we had more fluent speakers where they would make fun of you, you know, for if you tried to speak and you were doing it in broken language, or you didn't, you know, you weren't a speaker, people would make fun of you. I think that started to really, that isn't the case anymore, but I'm old enough to remember that time as well. So there's a lot going on. And then for me, I'm type A, and I'm used to doing well in things. You know, when I put my mind to it, I like to succeed at things. And so I also have a fear of failure going on for me. And boy, I'll tell you, I've failed lots when it comes to learning this. it's a challenge. It's really hard work for me. And I'm exhausted by the end of a class. Like, my brain is just working like really hard.
It's a relief to actually hear that. I'm someone who has trouble wrapping my head around language. Even when they were shoving French down my throat in little school, I really had a hard time just grasping anything other than English. Mm-hmm. But what was the most rewarding part of being a part of the camp, the immersion camp for you?
I wasn't sure, you know, what it was going to be like just speaking Anishinaabemowin like 24/7 for 2 weeks straight. The first day was really exciting, and I was picking up so many new words, Shkikidwin, and the second day the exhaustion started to kick in, you know, because your brain is just working so hard in trying to process all the new words and communicate with people you don't know. I mean, you know, there were a dozen new students, new people that you don't know. I'll say two things. One, the Eshkenishnabemjig, I can't speak highly enough of the program that they run, because they're really working hard to try to pick people who they think will help keep the language alive, right? Like, that's the point that we're at right now. We got to move beyond learning numbers and the names of birds and animals and maybe a prayer, you know, like we have to start encouraging people to use it in their families and at home. And so they've really focused on people who are going to do their best to try to bring Anishinaabemowin in and create a community of speakers. And that can be really intimidating and it feels like a burden almost at times, but they do such a good job at making it fun, you know, like just all of those wonderful things about being in community and laughter, like just making fun and having games and making it as fun as possible. And so, yeah, we spend half the day doing grammar and that's like a heavy lift and that doesn't sound like much fun, right? But then lots of time playing games and then going out for a paddle on the lake and just speaking Anishinaabemowin. We went to Walmart and we did this crazy shopping trip all in Anishinaabemowin. And I remember we went to a restaurant. And of course, we had to speak Anishinaabemowin, and we had our teacher ordering for us because we all lined up and had to order burritos in Anishinaabemowin, and we couldn't speak English. And you know, when you're in a place like Sudbury and speaking Anishinaabemowin fluently amongst a group of people, it feels good. Like it felt good to be able to do that and to share the language amongst ourselves. And I'll tell you one last story. There was this one elder in particular who they had four first language speakers who were teaching us as well on the daily, four incredible women who have done an amazing job at keeping our language alive. And one I found to be a bit scary. She kind of, you know, real strict and she spoke very quickly. I had a harder time understanding her because she was a very fluent first speaker and I was a bit intimidated by her. And so I wasn't talking with her much on the lunch breaks or anything like that. And then I happened to step outside and she was having a smoke break. And I went, I just said, you know what, I got to get over this. And I just went up and I started talking to her about how she was, you know, about smoking. And she was telling me about how she was trying to quit all in Anishinaabemowin. And we had about a 5-minute conversation. And then I just went, wow, I'm doing it. Like I'm talking with her and we're having a laugh and all in the language. And I just felt real good. Like I was just like, that to me was a high point where I could start to talk with elders and I wasn't scared. Like I wasn't just kind of huddling in the corner and being, you know, nodding and smiling. I was actually carrying on a conversation. It was pretty limited. Like I speak at the language of about a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old Melissa on a good day. But it's still a good day. Like when I have those days where I have conversations and I understand the prayer and the circle and I can be part of the circle and speak, it feels pretty damn good.
That's incredible to hear. It's like you're a part of something that a lot of us haven't yet to experience.
Mm.
Totally sacred.
And, you know, there are lots of ways that we can express our being Anishinaabeg, lots of ways. You know, we can be powwow dancers, artists, storytellers, parents, you know, canoers, whatever. Like there's all kinds of ways that we can connect with the ways of our ancestors. But I have learned, you know, this journey, this language journey that I'm on, it has its ups and downs, peaks and valleys. And I hear that from a lot of second language learners. So I go through these peaks and valleys, and I wish I could just say it was a steady trajectory and I was the best student ever. And then I'm fluent now and I'm, you know, I'm paddling around in a birch bark canoe and speaking with the ancestors. Like, but I'm not, like, you know, I was doing great last summer after the camp. And then now I've kind of plateaued a bit and I got to like lean back into the energy. So I guess for your listeners, I would just say, it is a long journey learning the language. It's all fine and good for us to say that we need to revitalize our languages. And there are lots of our leaders that do that, but it's hard work. And it's even harder for those of us who are second language, like purely second language learners who didn't grow up with it in the home, or in the community. But it is so important. Like it is just, And there is more appetite for it now. There are, like I said, I think the fact that we can do these classes online now really has opened up a world of language learning. Like you don't have to go to the community to be in an immersion setting necessarily. I know that there are immersion camps online in Minnesota that are run, you know, you speak Anishinaabemowin Saturday, Sunday, every weekend, 24, you know, for 24 hours. You can do that on Zoom. And so there are opportunities and you just got to work through those valleys, and understand that. And my partner likes to say, you know, your goals keep shifting too. Like when I first started, I was like, I just want to be able to go into the lodge and say my prayers, you know, like that, and understand what the elder is saying when they say prayers in the lodge. And I can do that now and I feel good, you know, I feel real good, but I'm still beating myself up about not, you know, being a fluent speaker. So your goals shift over time. And when I take the bigger picture, yeah, after 4 or 5 years, I'm proud of the work that I've done. I still got lots of work to do. Learning the language is a lifelong journey. And again, I can't, like my young teacher, Nanotig, I just have so much admiration for him. He says that all the time. He just says it's a lifelong journey and you're not going to be fluent overnight. And you just got to keep on keeping on.
You just have to keep on keeping on. When we come back, Duncan teaches me a bit of Anishinaabe Moin, and he's a little playful about it. But I want to play a song for you. This is from one of my favorite singer-songwriters from the Anishinaabe Nation. His name is Leonard Sumner, and he is from the Little Saskatchewan First Nation. That's just northeast of Winnipeg. Check him out on all streaming platforms if you like what you're hearing. There is definitely more. I've had the privilege of watching him grow as an artist for well over 10 years. This is from his latest album. It's called Traveling Light, and the song is called Time Machine. This is Leonard Sumner.
When I don't know how divine I be, the same creator designing me, made the leaves and the breeze and the trees in the fall time. And if I chose a ride here, do I get to choose a ride back? Thoughts that I have as I walk past, old memories like a time lapse. Wish you had a time machine. You've been living out your wildest dreams. Is your reality a fantasy? Did you see the things you planned to see? Do you wish you had a time machine? You've been living out your wildest dreams. Is your reality a fantasy? Did you see the things you planned to see? Trying to get my figure straight, land back or assimilate, back to the land or real estate. I'm asking, what does money do when you break the bank with money? Do the spirit really need deposits, tobacco ties for ancient knowledge? And how do I honor obligations to past and future generations? Walking lines that border hatred while navigating segregation, raising babies, raising stakes. Mind the way your garden grows, raise your babies to relate to the way the wind and water flows. You've been living out your wildest dreams. Is your reality a fantasy? Did you see the things you planned to see? Wish you had a time machine. You've been living out your wildest dreams. Is your reality a fantasy? Did you see the things you planned to see? Wish you had a time machine.
So I have just one more little segment left before you go, but if you could teach me three words, what words would they be?
You're going to put me on the spot. Three words. So I'll teach you one off the top of my head, just so that people know. I introduced myself at the beginning. Onkwadans and Dijnakas. Onkwat means cloud, and ans is a diminutive, so it makes it small. So Onkwadans means little cloud, and that is the name that I got from my shomas, and I'm proud to carry that word today.
Onkwadans,
yeah.
Onkwadans. So onkwa means the little, and then dance means the cloud.
Onkwit is the cloud, yeah, and then onkwadans,
or
in a different dialect, onkwadans is another way of saying it. Onkwadans, onkwadans. So a little cloud, that's one. Survival, Anishinaabe one, Gizagin. I love you.
Gizagin.
So Zage is the verb to love. Gizagin, I love you. So if you're out on the powwow trail and you see a real nice looking Anishinaabe kwe or Anishinaabe nene, go up to them and say Gizagin. Just see how that goes over. I love you. Really important thing to learn. And then last thing, also survival in Anishinaabe when Ngibogit. Ngibogit. Do you know what you just said? Ngibogit? I just farted.
Oh. Ngibogit. Good one.
Nishin.
Thank you. Or Miigwech.
Ah, Miigwech. Miigwech. Miigwech Bazindayik. Thanks for listening to me.
Duncan McHugh, what a sense of humor. Such a great conversation and really giving me a proper